reason that I say quickly is because we have a business meeting tonight, and we've got one thing that we need to talk about this evening, and I'll share that with you here in just a few minutes. But I did want to give you a little bit of the word tonight. Matthew chapter 25, beginning in verse number 1 through verse number 13, it is the parable of the 10 virgins. And so I want us to kind of wade through this evening, and I want us to hopefully learn something from the word this evening. Look with me at verse number 1. Then shall the kingdom of heaven be likened unto 10 virgins, which took their lamps, went forth to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were wise, and 5 were foolish. They that were foolish took their lamps, and took no oil with them. But the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. While the bridegroom tarried, they all slumbered and slept. And at midnight there was a cry made, "Behold, the bridegroom cometh. Go ye out to meet him." Then all those virgins arose. All of them were asleep, and all of them arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said unto the wise, "Give us of your oil, for our lamps are gone out." But the wise answered, saying, "Not so, lest there be not enough for us and you. But go ye rather to them that sell, and buy for yourselves." And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and they that were ready went in with him to the marriage, and the door was shut. Afterward came also the other virgins, the foolish virgins, saying, "Lord, Lord, open to us." But he answered and said, "Verily I say unto you, I know you not. Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour wherein the Son of Man cometh." Tonight, I want us to look at just 4 things, and I tried to alliterate it for you. I don't always alliterate, but today I was able to come up with an alliteration. And so I want to give you 4 things this evening. And the first thing that I want you to see is I want you to see there's a preparation to be made. That's in verse 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Now, marriage customs in the East are totally different than they are in the West. In the West, everything that is important, probably, all deals with the bride. The weddings that we have had here in this auditorium, most of the time, the bride is going to come in from back there. The room that's over in the corner over there is called a bridal room. We don't have a groom room. It's a bridal room. There's a couple of doors that you can open up, and there's huge full-length mirrors that you, the ladies and their mama and their aunts and uncles and their girlfriends, they can look and they can ooh and ah and make sure that everything is absolutely perfect. The groom, he's usually stuck over here in a corner, right? He's there with his best man and usually the preacher. And at the appointed time, when you hear certain things come on the, you know, across the piano, you come walking out, we walk down here, we stand here like Willie Lump Lump, and we're just waiting. And what are we waiting on? We're waiting for those back doors to open. And a beautiful girl with a beautiful white dress is being walked down the aisle most of the time by her dad. I heard a funny story about a wedding. This little girl was watching, and she asked the grandmother that was sitting next to her, said, "Can I ask you a question? I don't understand this." Why did she come down the aisle with one man and left with another? She just couldn't quite grasp that, all right? But we'll have them walk down the aisle and they'll, you know, take a couple of steps, and they might even have a little flower girl that are throwing flowers and all that stuff. Everything is focused on her. Not so in the East. Everything in the East is focused on the groom or bridegroom, all right? How would weddings take place? Well, there's a man named Fruchtenbaum. He is a great, great writer. He's a Jewish Christian, and I came across him several years ago when I was doing some master's work. Arnold Fruchtenbaum. He has written extensively about Jewish customs in his commentaries. And he goes through all of the steps. And I was thinking about the steps that he covers. And I think there were like 23 of them. Most of the information, if you were to get one of his commentaries, it would be the one on the Song of Solomon is the one that you would want if you're looking for a lot of customs, all right? And so what you would have is you would have a bridegroom, and it would all be about him. Nobody may know when he's going to come. He may have some buddies that are hanging out with him, but the bride is at her mom and daddy's house. And she knows he's going to come at some time within some little framework. And so she is to be prepared for that. And so when you read this, in our way of thinking, it doesn't always want to mesh and us understand it. But to the Eastern people that Jesus was telling this to, it made perfect sense. When you have things that we read, like it says that, let's look at verse number 5. While the bridegroom tarried, it said that they all slumbered. In other words, they got tired. They got sleepy. And can I tell you that's okay? I have people tell me every week, I am just tired. And we all get tired. And you know, when somebody says, now you got to watch, it talks about watching and praying. That's true. But can I tell you that even the best of us have to have sleep at some time, and so therefore you can't watch when you're sleeping? These virgins are not condemned for sleeping in this passage. You can read this parable 10 times and you will not find one condemnation if you read it slowly, not one condemnation for slumbering. But you do find a condemnation for not being prepared. And so you and I, as far as learning a lesson from this, we need to be like good boy and Girl Scouts, always be prepared. Now, how do we do that? I think we do it by trying to walk with the Lord daily. I think that we do it by trying to live lives of obedience. I think that we do it by spending time in the Word. I think we do it by keeping short accounts with the Lord in our prayer lives. I think we do it by encouraging one another in the ways of the Lord. I think we do it when we try to reclaim a brother or sister who has begun to walk wayward. And I think all of those things are part of what I would call the abundant Christian life. And if you're living that type of life, then you're prepared for the bridegroom to come. And so we see that there are 10 virgins that are going to be invited to be a part of the big marriage feast. Now, I think if you're looking for types and pictures here, I think that the virgins probably could be called a type of our visible or local church. The reason that I say that is because I think that on the roll of Corinth Baptist Church, I think that we have people that are members that really are not saved. I've heard people say that, greater preachers than, you know, than I'll ever be. I've heard men like W.A. Criswell. At one time, they had 50,000 members at the First Baptist Church in Dallas, Texas. And he said, "It scares me to death because I think that over half of my church membership is lost." Billy Graham made similar statements. And I have heard preachers that have large churches make that statement. But can I tell you, it does not matter the size of the church. There are people that are on the roll of Baptist churches that are lost. I told somebody not long ago, I said, "You can tell us two lies and join our church." Now you think about this. What's the criteria to join a Baptist church? Number one, you got to be saved. If you come down and we say, "Are you saved? Have you ever trusted the Lord? Are you born again?" They can lie through their teeth, but if they say yes, we go to the second question. What's the second question? Have you been baptized by immersion? Because we don't accept sprinkling. And if they go, "Well, yes, I have. You remember the church?" No, I don't. All right, we'll accept you by statement. And we just accept it at whatever they say. They could lie two times and become part of this church. And they could come and lie to other churches and be a part of their church. But when it comes to knowing Christ, there's going to be a time of dividing. And those that know the Lord are going to be separated from those that do not know the Lord. And so there is a preparation that has gone into this. And can I tell you that when you look at this parable, every one of these girls had the same opportunity. Now let that sink in a moment. Every one of them could have prepared. Is that not what Romans 1 tells us, that in the day of judgment that everybody will be without excuse? And so they all had the same opportunity. They all were able to sleep, but the problem came with the preparation that they should have made. The second thing, look with me at verse 6. There's a pattering in the street. That was the one P that I had a hard time coming up with, pattering in the street. All right? Verse 6, "And at midnight there was a cry made." They were to be watching. They did not know when the bridegroom was going to come. One commentator said that it was a very common thing to try to come and catch people not ready. When they were trying to do weddings, they would say, "Hey, let's try to pull a trick on them. Let's try to catch them when they're not ready." Well, I don't think that in this parable there's necessarily any type of trickery going on. It just so happened that at midnight was when the bridegroom decided to come. And so what do we hear? We hear a pattering. We hear a sound in the streets. Now all of these girls are at one place. They're all at one location. They've all fallen asleep. They all have lamps. All of the lamps, and I'll share this with you in a moment, all of the lamps began with some oil. But something happened. And so, as they're sleeping, a herald, a messenger, he begins coming down the streets, and he is a front runner for the bridegroom. When you think about a herald, somebody that goes before. The most famous one in the New Testament is John the Baptist. They said, "Are you the Messiah?" He said, "No." He said, "I'm just the voice in the wilderness." He said, "There's going to be one come after me whose shoes I'm not worthy to stoop down and unlatch." And so you've got John the Baptist, and he is announcing. And what happens that day when Jesus comes down to the Jordan? John looks and says, "Behold the Lamb of God that takes away the sin of the world." He's announcing that. And so you've got this man going through the streets, headed toward the place where these girls are at. And he's saying something like this: "Behold, the bridegroom cometh." And he's saying it loud. And so these girls begin to stir. And then he says this. He says, "Go ye out to meet him." In other words, wake up. He's coming. Get out in the street. Carry your lamp out. Hold it up. Make it bright. Is that similar to what Jesus said on the Sermon on the Mount when he said, "Let your light shine before men"? I think so. We teach our kids that little song about this little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. Put it under a bushel? No, I'm going to let it shine. Won't let Satan blow it out? I'm going to let it shine. I mean, we teach our kids those little songs. And those little songs have their foundations in things like we're to be the light of the world, we're to be salt of the earth. And so there is this announcement that is going on. And you need to get outside. You need to get your lamps bright. Why? Because it's a festive occasion. And can I tell you, I think it's going to be a festive occasion when Jesus comes. As a matter of fact, I'd like for him to come tonight. I mean, I talk to people and they are just having a tough time. Yesterday, I was in Atlanta, as I mentioned earlier, and we heard the governor speak. And Governor Kemp, his wife is named Marty. And he and Marty are front and center in the state of Georgia, and Georgia is leading the nation in this, and what is called human trafficking, where that they will kidnap and take young girls, and they will basically turn them into prostitutes, get them hooked on drugs, and they will brutalize and basically steal these kids' childhoods. And he shared one story. This girl, when she was talking to Governor Kemp and Marty, she was about 14. She had been taken when she was 9. And they had begun to brutalize her and to use her. And she was finally rescued. And when she was talking to the governor and to his wife, she was telling them things that had gone on, and when they finally were leaving to go home, they were talking, and he said, "My wife looked at me and said, they took her childhood. She's 14 years old, and she knows things that 25-year-olds ought not know." And so, there's horrible things, you know, that are going on out there. And so you've got him coming at midnight, and you've got the bridegroom and they're being announced, and you've got some that are going to be ready and some that are not. And so there's a third thing I want you to see. I want you to see the problem that could have been avoided. Look at verse 7. "Then all those virgins arose." Who's the all? All of them that were asleep, all 10. "And they trimmed their lamps." Now, in the time of Jesus, they had lamps that were fueled with olive oil. And I want you to visualize like a gravy ladle that has a top on it. It's got a little spout that comes this way, and there's a little opening on the top, and then there's a little hook that you can put your finger through. And there's, through the little spout that's on this end, there's a wick. It's a cloth. And what had happened was they had their lamps, and they had begun to go out. And let's look and see how they got foolish and how those others were wise. All right, back up with me, and I want you to see verse number 3. They that were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them. The only oil that they had was the oil that was in their lamp. But look at verse number 4. But the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. Now, what the foolish people did was they just go, "Yeah, I got plenty. I'm good. I'm okay." But the wise girls, they thought, "I need a backup." And so what they would do is they would take a little vessel, not their lamp, but an extra vessel. We see that in verse 4. It says they took their vessels with their lamps. So they're carrying multiple containers. And they have oil in those containers. And so they've got oil in their lamp. Keep it burning, burning, burning. And they've got oil in their vessels, and it may be tied to their waist. Maybe they would have two of them. And so, what takes place? When they woke, the man is saying, "The bridegroom's coming, go out to meet him." The foolish in verse number 8 said this, "Give us of your oil, for our lamps are gone out." The Greek word for gone out there, it literally means they were dimming. They were going out. They had not yet quite extinguished, but they were not full blown illuminating. And so they wake up, all 10. When they went to sleep, the lamps begin to dim. And so when they hear the messenger, they jump up, they begin to take their fingers and move the ends of the wicks. They get rid of all the hardness, and then they begin to light them. The problem is, while they were going out as they were going to sleep, 5 of them did not have any replacement. They did not have any oil. And so you've got them saying, "Give us of your oil, for our lamps have gone out." But in verse number 9, it says, "The wise answered, 'Not so, lest there not be enough for us and you.'" In other words, we know he's coming, but we don't know if he's coming in the next 5 minutes. We know he's coming, but it may be the morning. But we're not going back to sleep because we want to have our lamps ready so when the bridegroom comes, we can go into the marriage feast together. And so they're holding the lamp up and they're saying, "Give me some oil." "You're not getting my oil. I may need my oil." And when you look at that, I want you to know that a lack of preparation caused their problem. I've already mentioned they had the same opportunities. During the daytime, you know what they could have done? They could have gone and they could have bought oil from the people that they bought from that night. They could have went down to the Acme Oil Company and they could have bought them or had them a little vessel of oil filled up. And whenever they went to the place where all of the girls were going to be congregating, they could have had oil too. But maybe they had other stuff they were thinking about. Maybe their minds were preoccupied with things besides the bridegroom. And sometimes if we're not careful, we'll be like James says, and we'll be double-minded men in all of our ways. We'll get our eyes on something else, and the next thing you know, we've gone a whole day and have not really spent any time with the Lord. We've got folks, and they have got their focus so much on the things of this world that some of them don't even come to church on Sunday. And so you've got these girls that had every opportunity. They knew that there was a time when that bridegroom was going to be coming. They knew that the longer he did not come, the more, I guess, shorter or a shorter amount of time that there was going to be when he did come. And so they could have done it during the morning. They could have done it in the afternoon. But at night was when they needed the oil because it was dark and there needed to be light. Make it festive for the marriage feast. And by the way, in the East, almost all of the weddings take place at night. One of the things that fascinated me was about 20 years ago. My wife used to work with a lady, and the lady was Hindu. And her daughter was marrying a boy that was Muslim. They weren't real thrilled about it, but you know, sometimes kids do things in whatever culture it is to irritate parents. But on this particular Friday night, we were invited to go to the Ritz-Carlton in Atlanta. They had rented out a big room. And I told Deb, I said, okay, I said, we can do that. I said, but maybe we'll get out of there early. And she said, oh, you don't even realize what you just said. I said, what are you talking about? She said, it don't start till 10 o'clock. I said, at night? And she said, yeah. I said, I ain't going. She said, yes, you are, because I ain't going by myself. We got down there, and you talk about people that had colorful outfits on. The groom was walking around, as the Lord is my witness, he had shoes on that looked like something out of Aladdin. I mean, it had the points on them, you know, with the curl on them. And they had food that I did not recognize. I found out that it was all kind of goat. And I finally just thought, okay, I'm eating rice. And that's what I ate. I ate rice. You know, and this was around 9/11 time. And all I'm thinking is, here I am, and I've got six other people sitting at a table, and we're all Christian, and everybody else isn't. And all I'm thinking is, one of these waiters and waitresses drop a little bag off here by my table, we're out of here. I mean, we're out here like a fat boy in dodgeball, right? And so, they have weddings at night. And so there was the problem. What did they have to do? They had no oil, so they had to go to the oil merchants and had to try to get the olive oil to try to get oil for their lamps. But then there's a pain that we see. Look with me at verse 9. When they could not get the other people, they had to buy from somebody that was a merchant. And then verse number 10 tells us, and while they went to buy the oil that they needed, they waited too late. They should have done it earlier, but it was too late. And can I tell you that there's coming a time when the Lord comes that it may be too late for people? There's a verse that, or a passage I should say, over in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. And it gives me great pause when I read this. But basically it says this, that when the Holy Spirit is taken out and we're raptured, there's going to be people looking around going, where's God's people at? Where's the Christians at? And I mean, there's all kind of catastrophes that are going on. There's wrecks and there's plane crashes and there's probably ships running ashore and running into the docks and all of that kind of stuff. And they're going, where did these people go to? 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, I think it's around verse 9 through 11, says this, for this cause God will send them strong delusion that they will believe the lie. In other words, the Antichrist is going to be revealed and he's going to give a reason where all of God's people have gone to. What do I think it would be? I don't know. Been all kind of speculation about that. But you know, it hadn't been that long ago when there was such a fascination with aliens from other planets. They made movies about how that they would snatch people and go up there and experiment on them. All right? Maybe they'll say something like that. I don't know. But I know this. I know that when they left to go get that oil, the bridegroom came. And if you look with me at verse number 10 again, it says, I got to hurry. And they that were ready went in with him to the marriage or to the marriage feast, and the door was shut. There's a door that'll be shut one day, and nobody can open it. It's exactly the same thing that happened in Genesis 6. When the ark was finished and God sent that deluge and it rained for 40 days and 40 nights, it wasn't Noah that went into that boat and shut the door. It was God that shut the door. And Noah could not open it. God shut them out and they all perished save Noah and his boys and their wives. And so there was a pain that they had to endure. A couple of final thoughts. They could not share their oil. And can I tell you that we can't share our oil? And you say, what do you mean by that? What I mean by that is this. I've got three kids. I've got three grandkids. But the oil that they're father and grandfather has, I can't give it to them. They've got to get their own oil. They've got to trust Christ on their own. There are no grandchildren in God's family. You're a child of God. He does not have grandchildren. So I cannot take the oil that I've got. I can live for the Lord and do my best to try to live for the Lord. But I can't give my oil to anybody else for them to be saved. They've got to be saved on their own. Jonathan Edwards is considered to be the greatest theologian in American history. But he had a boy, his name was Pierpont, or I guess not Point, probably Pierpont would probably be the way to pronounce it. His boy was a heathen, one of the greatest preachers and theologians that's ever been in Christendom. And he had a son that rejected that. Jonathan Edwards, as great as he was, he could not give that to his boy. And we cannot give it to other people. They must receive it on their own. And so, as they're hurrying back, the bridegroom comes and shuts the door. And what does he say? Look at verse 12. They're saying, open up to us. And he doesn't even open that door. He just calls back and he says, I know you not. There are four types of people that are in this world. There are those, when they die, who are going to enter heaven triumphantly. They've walked with the Lord. They've been godly saints. And I'm telling you, that is just a blessing as a preacher to be able to preach a message when a saint of God has lived a life like that. It's not sadness. It's sad for the family. But there's joy knowing that their struggle's over. The second group of people are people that I believe to be saved. And we would say they are saved so as by fire. In other words, they don't really live for the Lord, but they're born again. And so therefore, we would say they got in by the skin of their teeth. There'll be some people like that. But then you've got a third group of people in this world, and that's the group of people, and they care nothing about God, and they're on the broad way to hell, and that's exactly where they're going. But then there's a fourth group, and that is the group that thinks they're going to heaven. But one day they'll stand before the Lord and they'll say something like this: Lord, did we not prophesy in your name? And he'll say, depart from me, I never knew you. Those are the four types of people. So what are we supposed to do? Make sure you have oil, number one. Make sure that you are not living a life of self-deception. You make sure that when you got saved, that there was a change on the inside of you, and that the sweet Spirit of God moved inside of you, because when you're thinking about a symbol or a picture of oil in the Bible, you think of the Holy Ghost. And so you make sure that you have oil. And then the second thing is we watch, because we don't know the day nor the hour that the Son of Man is going to come. Now, mark it down when somebody on television, and it's usually of the charismatic persuasion, somebody on television, and they'll set some kind of date. Somebody like old Harold Campton, I think is his name. And when it does not happen, they recalibrate and they say, send me some more money and I'll give you the answer. God's giving it to me now. One of the funniest things, I told Miss Pam about it today. One of the funniest things that I have heard in the last week. You know that Kobe Bryant and his daughter, along with I think six or seven other people, were killed out in L.A. in a helicopter crash. There is a preacher. He's in Africa. And he's put out the word, if you'll give me $50 million, I'll bring Kobe and his daughter back from the dead. All right? There's charlatans everywhere, folks. And when people begin to set dates, you mark it down, they're a false prophet. No man knows the day or the hour, but we watch. And when we have to sleep, we stay prepared. And when we hear the herald and we hear that shout, the voice of the archangel and the trump of God, we're at attention. We're ready. Why? Because our lamps have oil. All right? Father, I want to thank you for Matthew 25.